This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Big 12 Women's Basketball Championship gets underway this week in Kansas City. Plenty of teams vying not just for a championship trophy, but for potentially a berth in the NCAA tournament to improve their seeding, avoid seeing their seeding drop potentially. We're going to talk about that. And we now have our winners of the season awards. We got first team, we got coach of the year, co-players of the year. Since we didn't have an episode on Monday, we had to take the time to talk about this, and that meant we had to have our Big 12 women's basketball guru, savant, knower of all things, opinionator of all things, the 10-12 vibe queen herself, JSJ, Jamie Steyer-Johnson.
You keep adding more things that make me sound both more ridiculous and also, if I start believing them, we're all in trouble. But, you know, I'll take what I can get.
Not you strut, just strut around. There's current terms I'm not going to use because I will use them incorrectly. But you know what? Just have fun with it. Enjoy it. So let's start with, we know the Big 12 season awards have come out. We've got player of the year. We have co-players of the year this year, coach of the year, freshman first team. I know you have some opinions on these things. And we had a show on on Monday like we planned. My leadoff was, we haven't given Oklahoma enough credit this year. We haven't talked about them enough because they are leaving. But for a team to have been picked in the preseason, number five, to win, and I understand there's a lot of injuries and things that have affected the Big 12 this year. But for Oklahoma to do the to win the conference in the regular season, be as consistent as they were, despite the fact that I don't, like, if you look at CBB analytics, they're not the best team from a metric standpoint. They're just not. But they have won the Big 12 despite that. To survive this season with the wave of injuries that they have is very impressive. And so coach of the year going, as we have learned on Tuesday, to Jenny Baranchik of Oklahoma is a very deserved award just for even navigating the season.
Yeah. To me, there were three candidates for coach of the year that if any of them won, I would have said absolutely yes. This makes sense. And that was Coach Baranchik. It was Mark Kellogg at West Virginia. And I thought that Coach Fenley put together a good case, just knowing that you have five freshmen, knowing that, okay, you're finishing a little bit higher than you were picked, but also knowing that that was a long shot for a lot of reasons. I think that the sustained success he's had at Iowa State honestly works against him a little bit at this point. Iowa State was picked higher than I would have had them in the preseason poll probably. And then you end up fourth when you're picked six. People just say, well, yeah, it's Iowa State. So I won't get it into all that. In fact, he's never won one is insane. But, you know, there's time. This team hopefully will put together a case. But I thought that Kellogg at West Virginia did a really, really impressive job with a lot of holdovers from last year that had some success, but not anywhere near this level to be consistently ranked. I thought that he did a phenomenal job, especially considering you have a pretty short bench. You have a couple of pretty significant injuries, including one of his players he brought over from Stephen F. Austin that would have made a really big difference. And you ended up in a really pretty good spot in a league where there's some really great centers and you don't have one of your own. You're playing this up tempo style. So that's really tough. So I thought that he would have been a great choice as well. But for Oklahoma, I mean, they did what they had to do. And in a year where people really didn't give them a whole lot of a chance too. So the fact that Liz Scott got hurt right before the season, that definitely made a really big impact on the way that they played. But when you play double digit people regularly, like when you have a 10, 11, sometimes 12 person rotation, and when your 3 through 8 or 9 all get about the same amount of minutes, having the kind of graduating class they did last year is moderately less impactful. Obviously losing Maddie Williams, Taylor Robertson, Ani Anusa, like that is tough, but it's next man up. You know, you've got people that can step right into it. And so especially coming off of a weird non-conference slate capped off by losing to Southern, they came back in on a tear. I think that got their attention. Honestly, at this point, I would be really curious to ask Jenny, hey, do you think that helped in some weird way to help you guys get refocused? Because if it's me from the outside, I would think that it did. But yeah, OU, super, super impressive what they put together this year. They've been really, really tough in a year that people did not think that they would be that good.
And I think, you know, they have a lot of honors across the board, and I think we can kind of run through those. Again, the expectations for OU, especially coming out of non-conference, for them to win the Big 12, I mean, it's bravo, period, end of story. Like, we have to congratulate them because they have been impressive.
And so convincingly, right? You know, you get Texas, you take care of business there. Beyond that, you drop a couple, but I mean, there's no point where it was like, oh, they had this lucky break, blah, blah, blah. No, like, they did it. There's no questions.
I mean, if you want to say lucky break, it's other stars in the conference getting injured, right? It's because other teams had injuries to marquee players that affected their seasons, if that's the angle you want to take. But you still have to navigate your own season. You still have to be to win as many games as they did, which is impressive. So let's run through the rest of the awards. As I said, co-players of the year, Madison Booker of Texas, who is also the freshman of the year, co-player of the year, also Skylar Vann of Oklahoma, defensive player of the year, JJ Quinterly of West Virginia, very deserved. Newcomer of the year is Peyton Verhulst from Oklahoma, sixth player of the year, Dayana Gaston from Texas. And we'll get to first team and second team here in a second. Do you have any qualms or complaints about any of the awards that were handed out?
I don't have any major issues. I think it's a weird year, and we'll talk about this, I think, more with the first and second teams. But because of, as you mentioned, the injuries, and then because there's a lot of teams that have a significant amount of balance, and then on top of that, you are contending with adding four teams. I generally think that the Big 12 awards have been really, really good because they're voted on by the coaches, because the coaches are tapped in, they're well-educated on what's happening in the league. This is the first year in a while that there's a few that I think are pretty significant snubs or ones that I don't really look at and understand. And that's less on the player awards and more of the first and second team. But I knew that coming in due to the fact that there are, you know, there's so many people that were going to get votes. There was going to be some kind of weird things there. But for player of the year, it was really, really hard to forecast who it was going to be, especially prior to the end of the season, because the top, I mean, several candidates all ended up with significant injuries. I think that you go down the line, Rory Harmon, Ayoka Lee, Sedona Prince was putting together a great case, as was Madison Connor when TCU was really rolling. And a lot of their faltering down the stretch has been partially a result of both of those players getting hurt. And so all of a sudden you don't have one person who's putting together a very obvious case. Like Ashley Jones led the league in scoring, was first, second in rebounding, did everything for the team. You know, that was fairly easy. Prior to that, Nelissa Smith, same deal. That's easy. Now, you know, your league leader in scoring is Caitlin Peterson at UCF. When you're not winning, you're not going to get that reward. So it was really interesting. But looking at it, you say, okay, well, now you default to the easy pick, which is best player, best team. So it became a race between Skylar Vann, Madison Booker, JJ Quinterly. For K-State, if they would have ended up on top, I think it would have been Serena Sundell because of the time that Ayoka Lee spent out. And so then it was just waiting to see who ended up in first. And so I think that there's a really good chance that some of these people could have won or tied as the cases for player of the year with like four votes, because you have 14 teams voting. You're not getting one from your coach. It could be four for one, four for the other. And then, you know, that's eight, five people voting for other random people. I would pay more money than my husband would want me to get the ballots. I would do crazy things to get those ballots. Packers D, no, just kidding. But the player of the year makes sense. Defensive player of the year, JJ Quinterly. I think the Big 12 is really good about rewarding defensive guards. When I was having Christian go through and guess, he starts thinking post. He's like, well, defensive player of the year is always a post. And my answer was not in the Big 12. And then he continues to guess posts. And I'm like, no, buddy, hey, focus, not in the Big 12. Like, let's think. But JJ was a menace. Madison Booker, freshman of the year, became increasingly obvious that was going to be the case. I would hope that Audie at least got a vote or two just because of what she means to the team. But she was rewarded. We'll get to that shortly. Peyton Verholtz as newcomer of the year was the only obvious answer in this entire thing. She really set herself apart. She's been massive for OU, especially in conference play. Love her game. Really a big fan of hers. I think what she's done in her time already at OU is massive. She's going to be a menace. Her shooting ability, her ball handling ability, her size. She's tough. I'm not mad to not see her again going forward. After maybe a postseason matchup for Iowa State. Sixth player. This is the one that I think was the most difficult. Like I said, there's a lot of parity, and then there is a lot of there's a lot of starters that got pushed out of sixth player roles into starting positions because of injuries. And so I understand Deanna Gaston. I don't love that she only played 18 games. I don't think that that's enough to win a conference award. There's not guidelines on it because it's the coaches voting, so it's kind of their judgment. But to me, playing 18 games is not sufficient. I think it should have been Zionna Walker. I think it should have been Zionna Walker from Kansas State. She played 30 games. She didn't start a single one. She played 20 minutes a game, threw in 7 points, shot, you know, over 40% from the floor, 4 rebounds, assist and a half, a steal. Defensively, she was really, really difficult to contend with. She can guard anywhere from the 1 to the 4 and sometimes the 5 if needed because of how long she is. And so I thought that she earned it. I wasn't surprised to see it not go to her because the numbers aren't particularly eye-popping, but Deanna Gaston averaged just under 9 points a game and shot just over 50%, had a similar rebounding numbers. And so I wish it would have gone to Zionna Walker, but again, this is probably a very, very weird race. There could have been 5-6 people that got votes. So that's kind of my thoughts on those. Nothing that's egregious, but not super exciting, inspiring. It's just a weird year for these awards.
Again, when so many of your top players in the conference go down with injury, that's what's going to happen. Like, someone's going to get these awards. And so it's not that we disagree that they weren't worthy of being awarded based off of our expectations of you should probably play this many games and you should probably be able to match this kind of stuff up and you should be on teams that win. This is kind of the names that fit the most with Skylar Vann and Madison Brooks. So, okay, first team. Let's look at Brooke first team. There's 10 players in the first team. I can hear you all your eyes rolling very hard. I don't necessarily disagree. We're not going to get into that today. Here are the names on here are the names on the All Big 12 first team. Lauren Gustin of BYU, Audie Crooks of Iowa State, Tiana Jackson of Kansas, Smia Nichols of Kansas, Ayoka Lee of Kansas State, Serena Sundell of Kansas State, Skylar Vann and Peyton Verhulst of Oklahoma, Madison Booker of Texas, and J.J. Quinterly of West Virginia. I'll note, just in case you want to mention them in regards to this, there were five second-team players as well. Sarah Anders of Baylor, Caitlin Peterson of UCF, Madison Connor of TCU, Aaliyah Moore of Texas, and Jordan Harrison of West Virginia. It's a lot of names. Jamie, what are your thoughts? I know this is where you have the strongest opinion.
Yeah. So first of all, I'll say I got in an argument with Christian about this when it came out. And for those of you hearing me talk about my husband talking about women's basketball with him, yeah, that is all we talk about is women's basketball all the time. That's not a joke. This is facts. That's what it takes to be married to me. But he doesn't like the 10-person first team.
I don't know.
And I know that a lot of people don't. I don't know that it's ever been confirmed, but I believe that they went to that to prevent people from voting based on creating a starting lineup because it is the top players. I don't think it should be positional. Christian disagrees, which is what we argued about. But I think that having it be 10 people to avoid the trap of, okay, who should go into what spot and saying, okay, can they fit at this spot? Can they fit at that spot? And so people who have more versatility would get votes at more different positions, which would either split them off, split their votes and take them out of the running of certain ones. If you are going by position, like if everyone votes and puts a person in the one slot, and then if they get voted in the two slot, they don't combine them. I don't like that. And then otherwise, people who could be at multiple different slots would be a given because they're going to get more votes than people who are specifically in their spot. So all that to say, I think a 10-person team makes sense. I also would like to see the Big 12 expand it next year. The Big 10 does a 10-person first team and a 10-person second team. When there's 16 teams, I think you should have more than 15 spots. So very interested to see what happens there. Some ideas to throw around if I'm speaking to the right people in Kansas City, I suppose. But second point here, whatever. I don't know how to count either way. The fact that there's three freshmen on the first team should not be glossed over. That's incredible for those freshmen and for this league, especially considering two of the three will still be here after this year. The unanimous selections were Audie Crooks, Ayoka Lee, Skylar Vann, and Madison Booker. Two of your four unanimous selections are freshmen. I can say pretty confidently, I didn't like triple check, that there have never been three freshmen on the first team or first and second teams as it may be before they made it a 10 person. And I don't know that there's been very many, if ever, in other conferences where you have three freshmen on the first team. That is unreal. And so huge shout out to them. My issues here continue into the votes were probably very odd and they were probably very scattered. A lot of my issue is kind of a Homer thing. And so I'm going to try not to hammer it too hard, but I think that it's also accurate. So I'll stand by it. I admit when I have a really homer take, but this is also, I think, just a basketball thing. Addie Brown and Emily Ryan were really disrespected here. Addie was an honorable mention. That's great. I could not find another person who has been top five in both rebounding and assists in the conference ever. She is, I believe, second or fourth person in Big 12 history to average over 8 rebounds and over 4 assists per game. She had just under 5, and that's not even factoring in scoring. The other one that I recall is Bridget Carleton. So I know that one of the things I searched out for, I think that was just the two, maybe. And so I think that with what Audie did, she got overlooked a little bit. Her numbers fell off slightly during league play, but that was due to the next point, which is Emily Ryan. Emily played 19 games. She played the entire conference season. She came in late, but first of all, if you're conference award winner, sixth player of the year, can play 18 games. 19 is probably sufficient. She's not honorable mention, which means, to my knowledge, she didn't get a vote. I'd love to have a conversation with some of these coaches about that. When you lead the league and conference in assists, when you come back and you do the things that she has done after being out and coming back right before conference season, when you lead a team full of freshmen and you end up tying for fourth in the conference, I think that that earns at least a vote. At least a vote. And so I think that it comes down to a lot of name recognition, which is disappointing, but not, again, shocking considering the league expanded. There's more to try to cover, but 6.3 assists, 4.3 rebounds, shot 48% from the floor, averaged just over 10 points a game, and that's in just under 28 minutes of play. The per 40 numbers are higher. That is better than the point guard on the second team in Sarah Andrews. I think that she's a solid player, but she got there because of name recognition, because people thought we need to vote someone for Baylor. For Baylor, I think it should have been Dreanna Edwards. Her scoring was solid. She rebounded like crazy. She is super impactful defensively. So it's not just, my Iowa State players, I think, that didn't get the respect they deserved. Aaliyah Moore didn't have as great as stats, I think, as Dre Edwards a lot of the season. Madison Connor missed a good chunk of Big 12 play. I think there needs to be a bigger emphasis on Big 12, but I think the first team is fine. I don't know about Kansas having two players on there, but they're the two players that stood out the most. So naturally, they're going to end up getting more votes. The votes for other players or for other teams were split more. So I could talk about it for 4 hours. I'm going to cut it off there because people have probably tuned out, but I don't have huge issues. There's just some things I don't love about it. And then my last thing with Eddie Brown is not being unanimous on the all-freshman team is ridiculous. Ridiculous. All freshman team hotly contested. Absolutely. Ended up being Addie Brown, Audie Crooks, Samaya Nichols, Staley Hurd, Madison Booker. Naturally, the three on the first team and Audie Crooks, Samaya Nichols, and Madison Booker were unanimous. Addie should have been unanimous, and then people would have been picking between Staley Hurd and Kelly Wilson for the last spot.
There we go. All right. Okay, so let's talk about this week. Everybody's going to be in Kansas City. The bracket is set. Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas State, Iowa State with the double bye at this point because we have 14 teams. So they won't play until Saturday. On Thursday, we kick everything off. Houston versus Texas Tech and UCF versus Cincinnati. The rest of it is Baylor at the 5, West Virginia at the 6, 7 seed Kansas, 8 seed Oklahoma State, 9 seed TCU, 10 seed BYU. So the question before we dive into the tournament specifically is this. I got to thinking about the question I wanted to ask, which is, you know, who can hurt and help themselves the most in Kansas City this week? Because in my mindset, when we talk about the men's side, conference tournaments have a big role to play. Not just if you win, you get in. Mm-hmm. We've seen teams that we believe have moved up and down lines or gotten in or not gotten in because of what they did in their conference's postseason tournament. We have a lot of conversation about the women's tournament, and we just don't feel like the selection committee, who has little to no transparency, has as much nuance in the way they pick things to just go, all right, who are the top teams in the net? Congratulations, you're in. That's all we care about. I think the men's committee does put more nuance in because I do think there's more scrutiny on them. There's no scrutiny on the women's that needs to fix because they cannot continue to operate the way it is. It's kind of garbage, especially when where you get seated impacts whether or not you get to host the first few games of the tournament or not. So my question,
if only I knew about that.
So my question for you, oh, we're going to talk about where the Big 12 teams are currently projected in bracketology, and it's not great. So my question for you is this. How much impact does the Big 12 tournament, can it, or do we typically throughout history, has it had as far as actual seeding for the NCAA tournament?
So it's a weird answer because things have changed this year. It used to be the Big 12 tournament was right leading up to the selection show, right leading up to creating the bracket. And so there's some of that on the men's side as well. But as you said, there's a lot more scrutiny on the men's side. And so for the men, you knew they would take into account everything right up until the very last second. They would have contingency plans for, okay, if we're sitting here creating the bracket and the Big Ten championship game gets done, like right leading into the announcement, we're going to create two different brackets depending on if this team wins, if this team loses, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that that is what the women's committee does. I won't say for sure because I'm not in the room, but Iowa State probably should have been bumped up to the 4 line for having won the Big 12 tournament last year. They weren't. So, you know, is what it is. This year, the women's tournament is a week earlier. And so it is now at the same time as the rest of the major conferences, which means that there is at least the possibility that the entirety will be taken into account. I think in the past, maybe the opening games, maybe leading up to the day that they're creating the bracket was taken into account to some degree, depending on, you know, the person, how much they're locked in there, what else they're working on. But now it will be well and truly over by the time they are creating the bracket. So for the first time in, I don't know, I don't recall if it used to be earlier when it was split from the men's or not, and I didn't think to look it up. But for the first time in a long time, at the very least, it really can be taken into account, and there is no excuse not to. So there are some teams that have done a lot of really, really good work for themselves recently, which is also generally good for the conference. And there's also a lot of opportunity to move up. But yeah, I think that it will actually, hopefully, at least be taken into account this year.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
If you're heading to Kansas City for the men's or women's Big 12 tournament, make sure you stop by Charlie Hustle's pop-up shop. It's going to be located right in the heart of the Power and Light District, 1380 Main Street. It's going to have a ton of incredible Charlie Hustle gear, including for Big 12 teams. You can check out the fantastic t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, everything else that they're going to have available there in that pop-up shop during the tournament. Plus, if you can't make it, like myself, unfortunately, you can shop at charliehustle.com. They have absolutely fantastic stuff. They've got some great stuff on sale if you're a Big 12 fan that you need to go check out. If you find something that's not on sale, don't forget to use our promo code 10-12-15, TEN1215. It gets you 15% off all non-sale items across the site. Every Big 12 school they've got, which is everybody but Cincinnati, they've got Colorado, they've got other schools as well, plus a ton of great Kansas City gear, Kansas City Chiefs gear. So go and check out charliehustle.com. They love the Big 12, which is why we love them. So go check out the website. If you're going to be in Kansas City for the Big 12 men's and women's basketball tournaments, don't forget to check out their pop-up shop in the heart of the Power and Light District. We'll have more details about that. You can find them on our Twitter account, at 1012 Network. You can find them on their Twitter account, at Charlie Hustle Co. Go shop Charlie Hustle, vintage, made, fresh.
We like to assume the best, or we like to hope for the best and assume the worst when it comes to the selection committee for the women's basketball tournament. All right, I've got a couple of bracketologies pulled up. We're going to go with Charlie. Well, I'll ask you this, Jamie. I've got two pulled up. Should we go with Charlie Cream at ESPN, or should we go with her hoop stats bracket? As for who we think should be the one we pay attention to here.
I'd say let's look at Charlie Cream's, just because for better or worse, he's usually fairly accurate, which, you know, he's got a little bit more of that demonstrated history. I will say, really excited how many people are getting into bracketology over at The Athletic. I'm friends with Mark Schindler, who's been doing it, and if his isn't super accurate, I guarantee I'm going to wish it was, because he just puts so much thought into it. He puts really great blurbs with it. So if you're looking for really good analysis in these last like couple weeks here, definitely look at his stuff, because I read it and I'm like, someone else thinks that, like someone else said it, and that's coming from me. Oh, it's my favorite. But for this purpose, let's go with Charlie's.
All right, so we'll run down. There's seven teams. Half the conference is projected in on Charlie Cream's bracket. I'm going to kind of go to this as I go through each quadrant. The Albany one, which is where South Carolina is the one seed, has Oklahoma as the five, traveling to four seed Notre Dame. Portland two, which has Stanford as number one overall seed, has Iowa State as a nine at Stanford, and West Virginia as a seven in Baton Rouge at LSU. In Portland four, we have Baylor as the five seed, traveling to four seed Gonzaga in Spokane, Washington. Kansas as the nine seed at number one overall UCLA. And then over in Albany, we have, let's see, Kansas State as the five seed, traveling to four seed Colorado. Texas as the two seed in the bracket that is number one overall has Ohio State. I think I got it. No, where did I say West Virginia? I don't feel like I said West Virginia.
West Virginia, I believe, is
seven seed.
Yeah, okay.
So at this point, only one Big 12 team would get to host in the first round. That would be two seed Texas, while we would have Baylor on the five, Kansas State on the five, and Oklahoma on the five line. Whoop, seems very Big 12 for the Big 12 to be told, like, yeah, you guys don't ever get to host anything because we just don't think you're any good. Especially not when Oklahoma won the conference, and we just don't think that highly of Oklahoma. By the way, I'm going to bring up the net rankings because those do matter, which is interesting based off how these are. Texas is number three overall, Kansas State 14, 16, Baylor, West Virginia 22, Oklahoma 27, Iowa State 38, Kansas 40. That would be the seven teams projected in. Everybody else on the outside looking in. TCU, I think, is the only team. They're at 44 in the net, obviously 18 and 10. Rough season at the moment. Charlie Cream doesn't even have them projected as a next four out. So it does feel like it's these seven that we've talked about. TCU, maybe if they made a deep run of the tournament, they could play their way in. That would be a path that would go through Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and then probably Baylor and Iowa State, and then Kansas State or Texas. But based off of this, The question for you now, Jamie, who can help themselves the most? Who can hurt themselves the most in Kansas City this week?
So, first, before I forget, to your point on TCU, I do think in theory they could play themselves in. They would, in my opinion, have to make the championship minimum. Otherwise, the auto bid will get you, obviously. But
every time
I don't know how much the committee can, by their rules, or would consider it, but their net is affected pretty significantly by the fact that they did not play the games against what were the top two teams in the conference at the time, in Iowa State and Kansas State. And so that obviously makes a really significant difference. I don't think that they should be in consideration, frankly, regardless of what they do now. They're looking better since having Madison Connor and Sedona Prince back. Fact remains, they had to forfeit multiple games. They went on a skid in conference. I don't see it. Moving on. There has always been a greater emphasis put on how a team ends the season. And I used Iowa State as the case in point before for not having a lot of weight put on at least the end of the Big 12 tournament. Kansas is a perfect example of the what have you done lately that sometimes occurs on the committee, which is that last year they had pretty well played themselves into the tournament. They were still a bubble team, but they were leaning heavily on in because they finished pretty strong in conference. And then they lost to TCU in the tournament after TCU had won a single conference game. That knocked them out. So the fact that Kansas beat Oklahoma, even when it had no bearing on seeding, that knocked them off the four line. The fact that K-State has been really struggling, and I emphasize that because in win-loss, they haven't done terribly, but they have not won in inspiring fashion whatsoever in a lot of their recent games, even with Aoka Lee back, which is very concerning for their potential in the postseason. I tend to think that they brought her back way too much too soon. There's a lot of people that I think agree with me. Obviously not her doctor, but I think that there probably was an in-between there that could have been hit. So they were pretty well knocked off of the four line. And so Baylor, I don't know. Baylor's so up and down. Frankly, that's the matchup that, looking at the bracketology, obviously this is all going to change somewhat, but oh my God, I would love to see Baylor play Drake because they are similar in some ways in that Drake doesn't have like a true post. I'm going to nerd out over my little Missouri Valley thing since I, you know, called a couple of their games this year and all that fun stuff. They have really great guards. They'll shoot it. They'll push the pace. Oh my gosh. I think that would be such a great matchup. So I would love that. But I think that Baylor would really have to make a huge push. We're talking probably win it to get up to the four line. I think that K-State and OU could both get up to the four line with a little bit of help from teams above them, as well as winning a game convincingly, potentially. Just because their resume is pretty good. If they get to the championship, I really think that we will end up with one more four seed from the Big 12 if OU and or K-State end up in the championship. I think that either, maybe both of them could. But the biggest ones here are going to be Kansas. They are on a tear to end the season. They are a lot better at home. They will not be playing at home. Kansas City, close enough to get some fans there, but not at home. Like, there's the Fog Allen juju that really gets them going. That's been the case for a while now. But I can see them putting up, if not a win, a fight against Texas. And that would probably do a lot of good. If they can win against BYU, who really looks solid a lot of the time, they are a much better 10 seed than most conferences will see. So if you win there and then you go and you look pretty good against Texas, even without a win, I think you at least feel confident about getting in. It might not affect your seeding a whole lot, but you definitely feel confident about being in. For Iowa State, I think their ceiling's a 7. I think they could end up gaining a couple of spots. Moving up to an 8 does essentially nothing but change your uniform color, but a 7 would be massive. That would be likely getting either to the championship or winning it. Incidentally, could be an identical path to it as last year if all of the other favored teams win, which is interesting. And then beyond that, I don't really think there's bubble teams in a serious manner besides theoretically, like we said, TCU, which I don't think would happen. And Kansas is very much on the right side of the bubble right now. That win over OU took them off of the bubble pretty well for right now. West Virginia could maybe gain a seed line. I don't think they would probably gain 2. So there, I don't know that there's a lot of mobility, but there's some really consequential single seed line moves that could be made for those 5 seeds.
I mean, I think that's, you're right. For the 5s to have the ability to host, I'd be Oklahoma, Kansas State, or Baylor. I think that's where you're hoping for the most. Like, Texas is going to host. They're projected to 2. Even if they lose in the first round, like, okay, maybe they fall to a 3. Like, they're,
and
maybe
with help, potentially they could end up a 1. But yeah, that just, it makes so much less of a difference, especially in a year where 2 through, I mean, for the purposes of this 8, but even beyond that, has been a revolving door in like the AP poll and stuff. There's very little functional difference between a 1 and a 2 outside of South Carolina.
Yeah, who is ridiculous. All right, so if you're going to make a prediction, and I'm going to ask you to now, if you're going to, I'm going to ask you to. Who wins this week in Kansas City?
I can't do that. You know I can't do that. I will say, I'll give you a couple just nuggets of observation here. I think for the top side of the bracket, Kansas falling to the bottom side is great. Like I said, they've really been rolling. I would really like to see another little bit of OSU, OU. Those have been weird. Really weird this year.
Yeah.
But frankly, TCU also could pull a little run out of them. So I'm really looking at that game 8, OU versus the winner of TCU and OSU. For Iowa State, I would like to have another matchup with Baylor. I think that would be fun, just considering that basically no one was able to get to the lone one during the season because of how bad the weather was. And it was a really, really fun game. So that would be really exciting to kick off that Saturday with it. And for K-State's in kind of the danger zone, not for postseason, but they're spiraling a little bit. They have not looked like themselves. They ended the season on a really convincing road win, but they need to beat a good team and remember who they are and what they're capable of. And so for them, they really, I mean, you always would like to see a lower seed just to have theoretically an easier game. But I think they should be rooting to see West Virginia and see if they can really take care of business there in their first game, because they need the confidence boost. It's not really been pretty lately. So if they lose that first game, you're going into the postseason on a rough note. But part of it is I won't make predictions because, you know, I have rooting interest. And if I predict in favor of my rooting interest, that's a jinx. If I pick against them, that's foul and disgusting and wrong. But I also think it's really, really tough to predict because this league has had so much parity this year.
Fair enough. JSJ, always a pleasure. Do me a favor. I'm sure you're going to be in 1,000 different places. You're going to be in Kansas City this week for the tournament. So if everybody wants to hear your coverage, see your coverage, see your thoughts, where can they do so?
Yeah, you can find me on, I mostly am posted on Twitter at jstyz, J-S-T-E-Y-Z. I will be there starting on Thursday. Travel plans somewhat delayed for a good reason with the double bye, but I intend to be there when the games start, which is at, gosh, not till 5:30 on that Thursday. I'll be posting on there. Definitely plenty of tweets, maybe some video. I keep saying that, then I get lazier. I don't like the way I look on camera, but maybe we'll see. I'll try. But yeah, I'll be down there for hopefully the duration. Fingers crossed.
Podcast Network.